Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the City Council meeting for February 28th, 2017. The time right now is 7:02 p.m. Ms. Atkinson, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Hanford, Rasmussen, and Davis.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis, will you lead us in the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And I received word yesterday that Councilmember Cuddeback would not be able to make it this evening. She is going to intro to middle school tonight and at Hidden River and will not be here. Councilmember Gamble already had indicated that he would not be here this evening. And Councilmember Camp had contacted me earlier this evening to advise me that he has come down to the flu. So without objection, we will consider all three of them as being excused absences this evening. All right, thank you. So this evening we have three presentations. Now the first presentation is the 2016 Monroe Police Department Awards. Pleased to report we have a number of our officers and sergeants out in the audience, and I think that Chief Quinzer is going to come forward. Thank you.
I'd like to ask the following officers to come forward. Officer Craig Robertson, Officer Devin Tucker, Officer Tim Walker, and Officer Scott Cornish. This evening we are going to give out life-saving awards, and I would like to read to you the reason why we're giving these out this evening. So on May 18th, 2016, these officers were dispatched to check the welfare on a possible suicidal subject. Upon arrival at the residence, several calls were made to attempt to contact the subject. All calls went to voicemail. The officers went to the garage door and heard a vehicle running inside the garage. Sergeant Dunn, I forgot to mention him. Sergeant Dunn is unable to be here tonight due to emergency, but Sergeant Dunn was able to look through a garage window along the top section of the garage door and observe the subject sitting in the vehicle. One of the officers started to break the windows to allow the escape of carbon monoxide. The officers attempted to gain access through the garage door and the side door. As officers nudged the garage door up, they were able to slide their fingers underneath it and lift the garage door up. The officers could then see the subject was unconscious in his vehicle. It took several officers to grab the victim, who was a fairly large individual, and carry him out to the front lawn and fresh air. Once on the ground, the victim began to slowly breathe as an aid crews arrived at the scene. He was eventually transported by aid to the hospital to supply. The gentleman was within, we were told, within 3 to 5 minutes of expiring. The actions of these officers saved this man's life. I'm very proud to give each officer a life-saving award and my sincere thanks for a job well done. Slot machine because they won't get it. given out. as far as the Officer of the Year. And we started out by selecting, last year in 2016, we started out by selecting a Officer of the Quarter. And then we had the four officers selected. Then we looked at the those who had been selected for each quarter and determined which one would be chosen for the Officer of the Year. Officer Cornish, could you come back in, please? Officer Scott Cornish is a member of the PROACT team. The purpose of the PROACT team is to proactively enforce criminal behavior reoccurring within Monroe. Instead of responding to 911 calls, the team builds strategies to go after prolific criminals. Officer Cornish has repeatedly shown focus, commitment, and a positive attitude in his work. One example of his excellent work ethic was on September 7, 2016. Officer Cornish was working surveillance alone due to his staffing. Working alone did not stop Officer Cornish from being proactive. He made multiple self-initiated stops and contacted. His contacts led to three felony drug arrests, one drug paraphernalia arrest, and the recovery of 12 grams of methamphetamine, 6 grams of an unidentified substance, and 1.2 grams of heroin. He additionally contacted two other subjects who he positively identified the following day at the organized retail crime meeting as being suspects in organized retail theft. This is just one example of his persistent and successful investigative skills. Officer Cornish led the department with 75 arrests in 2016 and 25 search warrants. These arrests and search warrants directly relate to the drug houses and associated crimes that are occurring in Monroe. He has done and continues to do an exceptional job in proactively responding to the needs of the city of Monroe citizens. It was not a difficult selection in selecting this officer as the Monroe Police Officer of the Year. I'm not going to give you this to keep because we're going to hang it in our front office, but I will give it to you tonight.
Okay, pose for a picture.
Thank you very much, Chief. Okay, we're going to go ahead and move on to the next item on our agenda. This is a presentation recognizing 30 years of service. Mr. Feilberg, will you please come forward?
So, I've had the pleasure of working with Brad probably about 15 years ago when I was a council member, and as mayor for the last couple of years. It's my distinct pleasure to offer him a simple certificate of recognition for 30 years of service to the residents and the businesses and the council here in Monroe. I truly appreciate all the work that you've done. Councilman, come on down. Yeah, you are supposed to be holding
yes, sir. My face.
Oh, in front of your face.
Yeah.
He doesn't really have
no, he's fine.
So the rule is you have to buy ice cream.
It's
so.
The council members will cover you.
The council members. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, the next item that we have on the agenda this evening is a presentation. Snohomish County Department of Emergency Management, and this evening we have Mr. Jason Berman. Thank you very much for coming out this evening.
Thanks for having me. I'm humbled to follow both of those. So,
Thank you.
tap dance.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for having me tonight. What I wanted to do tonight is actually just give you an update on what we're doing with the Department of Emergency Management. As I'm sure you all know, you contract through interlocal agreement with us. And part of that interlocal agreement is that I come out a couple of times a year and update you on what we're doing, what we've been doing. And so this is my opportunity to do that, and I appreciate your time. Okay, so a little bit about who we are. This is the organizational structure we currently have. One of the things that's new this year is we incorporated the E911 office for the county into our operation. A good amount of my staff works in grant administration and finance. The two down here, the ones that are annotated as training and exercise. The two that serve at the bottom that say T&E, training and exercise, work primarily with all of our jurisdictions to ensure that you get training in your emergency operation centers and things like community points of distribution. But we also have someone on staff who works specifically with vulnerable populations. And we also have someone who works inside of our emergency coordination center. And we have someone who focuses specifically on planning and helps the jurisdictions with their planning efforts as well. So what we actually do, and this is something that I know we get asked a lot, under the law in Washington, there are local organizations and joint local organizations for emergency management. And we are, as a county department, a local organization. So that means our contract with you is to provide services, not to actually be your local emergency management department, but to actually support your local emergency management efforts. We do that for 20 jurisdictions throughout the county, every city and tribe and town, except for the city of Everett and the part of Bothell that's in Snohomish County. So that our total population that we cover is about 652,000. So if you saw the staff that was on the slide before, there are about 8 emergency managers that cover the population of about 650,000. We are also part of Homeland Security Region 1, which means we work really closely with our partners to the north and the west. And we're also a member of the Seattle Urban Area Security Initiative, which means we work closely with our partners to the south. Both of those are really grant-related and grant-focused. Homeland Security Region 1 is a little more what I would call operational. We plan with them for things like Glacier Peak and Mount Baker, things that affect this northern part of the state or northwestern part of the state. The Urban Area Security Initiative has funded a lot of things throughout the years, including things like structural collapse, training and equipment, upgrades to Snowhawk 10, which is our county search and rescue helicopter, and a number of other things that we use regionally. So we're part of both of those and have been for over a decade. How do we do all the things that we do? That's the way we're organized. It was, like I said, you could see it earlier on the organizational chart. And really how we do that is to work through all the different, what we call the different phases of emergency management. And we work with all the jurisdictions as they go through these. You're always, as a jurisdiction, in at least one of these. And we're always working, usually in at least one of these, sometimes in all four at once. So specifically, from our office, in terms of mitigation planning, we facilitate the county's hazard mitigation plan. It's one of the larger plans in the FEMA Region 10 footprint, which is Oregon, Idaho, Washington, and Alaska. We update it every 5 years. We work right now with the last time in 2015 with 38 different jurisdictions, all the cities, towns, and tribes in the special purpose districts, including some of the water and wastewater districts and the diking districts. And basically we go through and identify ways that we can try and mitigate the effects of disasters before they happen. Preparedness is what most folks think of in terms of emergency management. We do a lot of planning. Right now we have about 15 different plans that we participate in, including the ones you see up there. We do a lot of training. We have a lot of ICS training that's being offered throughout the county that we offer for
We also do training. In the last year, those two folks that I highlighted up there provided 39 different training opportunities to our jurisdictions and facilitated 22 different exercises. So they get around quite a bit. You see some of the larger ones we participated in up there. Cascadia Rising last year was the largest exercise in the state's history. We had 20,000 participants throughout the state. It also was participated in by the state of Oregon and counties down there, Alaska and part of Idaho, as well as British Columbia. And we as an entity also went back to what's called the Integrated Emergency Management Course back in 2010. That's a week-long exercise we did back in Maryland. We took 75 staff from throughout the county back to that and did an exercise based upon an earthquake fault that's actually almost specifically in our county, the South Whidbey Island Fault, which runs through the southwest part of the county. Response, we try not to be in this as often as possible, although it seems like we do this more often than we like. This is what we do, and mostly when we get seen. The other things we do tend to be behind the scenes. This is when we are activating the Emergency Coordination Center, which you see a picture of our coordination center there. And these are the things we do to coordinate the efforts of the jurisdictions throughout the county, the county's departments that are supporting those, as well as any entities that come in that are requested from either the state or the federal resources that we have available to us. All that happens there. It's a fairly large facility compared to our old one. We moved into this facility in 2012. During the height of the SR 530 response, we had on average about 100 people in there every day for 40 days. So it's an extremely adequate facility. We are in the process of upgrading the technology in there from analog to digital. And we've done a lot of rearranging and realigning roles and responsibilities since SR 530. The last phase we work in is recovery. We work closely with the jurisdictions, primarily out of our office, to ensure that we get your damage assessments. So we're reaching out to the cities that are affected by flooding, windstorms, earthquake, anything that would happen here, to ensure that we get good damage assessment numbers so that we can take all those together, consolidate them, and turn them into the state. And then we facilitate the damage assessment or the delivery of the public assistance process in coordination with the state's Emergency Management Division. So some of the things, and not all, I've omitted some slides just for brevity here. Some of the things about us, we are an organization that's changed a lot, specifically over the last few years. In 14, we obviously had SR 530, which was the deadliest mudslide in U.S. history. I mentioned we were activated in our coordination center for 40 days. That is something that we've gleaned a lot of lessons from. I have worked really closely with a number of jurisdictions and not just within the immediate region but around the state as well. We had some key retirements. Our deputy director at that time has retired since then. We had some promotion and added some folks to our staff. In 15, we sent 7 staff over to Okanagan County to support them during the height of Okanagan complex fires. Those were the largest fires in the state's history. And we spent a few of us spent a week there. Others spent up to 10 days there helping them in their emergency operations center. We developed and finalized a strategic plan. It says we started planning for Cascadia Rising. Actually, we started planning for Cascadia Rising back in 2013, but we really took off in earnest in 2015. We had a change in the executive, and then in 2015, we also started planning for the addition of this, 7 new cities, which were formerly served in Snohomish County by an organization called the Emergency Services Coordinating Agency, ESCA. They were the 7 Southwest County cities. We started planning for bringing them on board in 2015 when they voted to dissolve that organization. So in 16, we finalized a strategic plan. We participated in Cascadia Rising. The executive rolled out the initiative called STEP, which is the county's version of Lean. In his budget address, we talked about efficiency and ways to make government more efficient, which led to my proposal to bring E911 into our organization, which we did on the 1st of this year. And then we incorporated those 7 new cities into our footprint. That added about 165,000 more folks over what we were previously doing. We also, between 15 and 16, added 3 new staff to help support that. So some of the things we'll be doing in 17, we have a regional incident management team. We're we are working closely with them to make sure that they can cover the entire county, and not just our county, but the other four partners we have, the other four partner counties we have in the Homeland Security region. My folks will be going around to every jurisdiction with whom we have an agreement to make sure that they all have a baseline capability in their EOC. If you're familiar with Map Your Neighborhood, and I hope you are, but if you're not, we'll be coming out and trying to push that. One of my really strong beliefs, both from experience and just the history of disasters, is during large disasters, neighbors help neighbors, and that's how most of the work gets done, at least in the immediate aftermath. So Map Your Neighborhood is a way that neighborhoods can sit together and develop an idea of who has what resources, who can help whom, who needs help, and we facilitate delivery of that out of our office. We've had a few cities that have adopted it wholesale. We have a few more that are looking at adopting it wholesale, and it's something that we're really pushing because we know in these large catastrophes that there's not going to be enough first responder resources to go around. They're going to be victims like everyone else. They're going to have priorities, so we really are trying to build as much neighborhood level resilience as we can. Our county's comprehensive emergency management plan will get updated this year, and for us that's a way that we can link the efforts of all the departments in the county as well as what we do with all of the jurisdictions. And then there are a couple of state level things that are going to affect our county as well. You may have heard a governor's sub-cabinet that's been convened in the aftermath of the Cascadia Rising exercise to talk about catastrophic planning and how we develop resilience against earthquakes. And we're working closely with the state to identify better ways to sustainably fund emergency management throughout the state. A lot of the grant money that supports my staff comes from grant sources that the state actually is the grantee and we're the sub-grantee. So if the state has a sustainable funding source, we will get more of that money pushed down to the local government so that we can actually utilize more of it before it's taken and used at the state level. Last thing, these zones. We are looking at how we organize the county in areas broken down by things that we think are going to break during earthquakes, airfields that are available, and make it so it's more manageable in terms of if we have something like an earthquake that affects the entire county, how do we organize so that we're not trying to manage 22 different jurisdictions? And for you all within your area, how do you help each other best when everyone's short-staffed? So one of the things that we are have been working on since starting the Cascadia Rising planning and has been talked about at our advisory board is how do we regionalize even within the county so that we start building better relationships for disaster response. And this is a map. Brad, congratulations on 30 years, gave good feedback to this. And we've had input from some others, and this is one of the things we'll start really working on in earnest. We started down this road this past year with some of our training. We're going to start pushing into this with exercising and bringing staff from the jurisdictions within those regions together to work more closely together with the idea that within 3 years we'll do another much smaller scale Cascadia Rising exercise, one that's just for this county, but where we hope to validate this as a concept so that we have something really bad. We have a better organizational model for how we're going to all work together and manage when, God forbid, we're all affected by this. So that's the brief overview. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Council members, do you have any questions or comments? Looks like there aren't any.
Okay.
Thank you very much for the work that you do in helping to coordinate emergency management.
Okay, you're welcome. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate the time. Thanks.
All right, the next item that we have on our agenda this evening is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter that is subject to a public hearing. Public comment is limited to 3 minutes per speaker, and we do have a sign-up sheet. Mr. Rick Hansen.
I'm fine, thanks.
Okay, sounds good. Ms. Erin Angusnapka.
It's been a while since
anyone
called me that.
Mrs.
Brooks. Thank you,
Mrs. Ms.
Ms.
There you go.
Erin Angus Napa, 421 South Lewis Street, Monroe. That's everything.
Yes, that works.
So the Downtown Monroe Association is having a cleanup on Friday, March 10th from 4 to 5:30. And I'm really hoping that perhaps some of you folks will consider coming out and helping us straighten up the downtown. I've got flyers for everybody. No pressure.
Clean up downtown.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, is there anybody else that would like to speak to the City Council this evening? Anybody at all? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Council, Councilmember Rasmussen.
Move to approve consent agenda.
Second. I have a second from Councilmember Scarborough, but first I have a first from Councilmember Rasmussen. Any discussion on the motion to approve the consent agenda? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. Consent agenda is approved. It passes 4-0. Next item on the agenda is unfinished business. Item number 1, 17-037, authorize the mayor to sign an interlocal agreement with Snohomish Health District, relinquishing Rucker building potential claim of ownership and financial interest. And I think this is Mr. Mosley.
Thank you, Mayor. Got several discussion items on this topic, and at our council meeting on February 21st, council reached a consensus on the proposed interlocal agreement. Asked that it be brought back to you for tonight's meeting for potential action to authorize the mayor to sign the agreement. So the issue is before the interlocal agreement is before you for your consideration and potential action.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Again, Mr. Mosley, Brad, all the staff to put so much work into researching this. I know it wasn't easy, but definitely appreciate all the data. And Heather and her team from the health district coming out and meeting with us. So I've felt pretty comfortable moving forward with this, especially as it continues to go on. So I don't have a question, but I will make a motion to move to authorize the mayor to sign the interlocal agreement with the Snohomish Health District, relinquishing any potential claim of ownership or financial interest in the Rucker building, and expressly authorize any further minor revisions deemed necessary or appropriate. Second.
Thank you. I have a motion from Councilmember Rasmussen and a second from Councilmember Davis for the requested action as written in Agenda Bill 17-037. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 4-0. Thank you, everybody. The next item that we have on the agenda is new business, item number 1. This is AB 17038, authorizes the mayor to purchase playground equipment for Lake Tide Parks. And we have Mr. Farrell here.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you,
Council. Bear with me for a second here.
You have to take the paper off.
City Council authorized CIP funding for replacement of our 20-year-old playground at Lake Tide Park, which is listed project in our six-year CIP of the park plan. The playground has outlived its service life, replacement parts were becoming non-existent, and features were dated and lacking the inclusive challenge and motion elements that the playground industry of today offers. The Monroe Park Board reviewed the existing playground equipment at their October 2016 meeting. Comments regarding the playground replacement included new active play features and improved ADA accessibility. Design criteria established for the new playground include features that encourage multi-generational play, ADA inclusive play spaces that intentionally break down physical and social barriers to play, playful public art that enhances the visual appeal of the park, and advanced climbing challenges and motion activities that appeal to older children who seek a more adventurous play experience. Surfacing improvements, such as the use of rubberized surfacing, is also desired in the playground design. Sightlines Park and Playground Equipment of Everett, Washington was tasked to design a new playground for Lakeside Park that incorporates all of the design criteria within the existing playground footprint. A representative from the company made a presentation of the design to the park board and invited public at the February 23rd meeting this year held at Frylands Elementary School. After that presentation, the park board recommended that the city, Monroe City Council, approve this playground project as designed for the park. The company is authorized vendor for Game Time, which is a nationally recognized playground equipment manufacturer, and is also authorized through the U.S. Communities Government Purchasing Cooperative to sell and install playgrounds that are competitively bid through the program. The City of Monroe is a member of the U.S. Communities Nationwide Purchasing Cooperative, which allows public agencies to purchase eligible supplies, equipment, and factory-certified installation services at competitively bid prices. A total of $317,545 for purchase of the playground equipment includes installation at state prevailing wage, performance bond, tax, and freight. The project is budgeted in 2017 CIP fund for $300,000 with additional $20,000 from the park CIP fund balance. The U.S. community's competitive bid pricing discounts average close to 24% off the listed pricing of the playground equipment. So, but what we're effectively getting is something more of like a $400,000 project, and we're able to, you know, get it for $317,000. The last thing I want to mention before I get into the show here is timely approval is desired so that the equipment can be ordered in time to be installed and the project completed by the end of May of this year. That's what we're hoping to do, is that to have it open and kids playing in it at least by Memorial Day weekend, if not sooner. So, and with that, move on to the show.
Just let everybody, oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were going to do the video.
Oh, we're getting there.
We're getting there. So, yeah. Video. We have my video online, sorry.
So, I'm just running through. This is the presentation that was given at the park board meeting, and I'm just gonna run through it quickly and just point out just things to your attention. So, existing playground, extremely heavy use. It's like one of our most heavily used community parks. Dated appearance, it's 20 years old. Hard to maintain in that I've mentioned this before to the council. When we've had something that wears out, breaks, it's hard to find replacement parts for it. There's little interest for under five. Kids. You can see the little 3 to 5 structure there. It's very simple. You climb up, slide down, slide, and that's pretty much that. No inclusive activities, and so we wanted to create a play destination at this park. And it's the design team, and we showed some pictures of the ducks because he actually has been a member of Trout Unlimited, which does the kids' fishing derby, so he's well the person that owns the Sightlines Playground Company. So he's well aware of Lakeside Park. So who are the users? Kids. Tall, short, and kids that have special needs. Kids with disabilities are just kids. So these are some things that we have had traditionally: tower slides, our infamous merry-go-round. That's not the exact one, but it's like it. Great activities, but all from the last century. So, folks, they measure the site, identify the current uses. Circulation is huge. Access to the play area is something that we desire improvements there. ADA and accessibility, supervision, security. That kind of goes along with the older playground, or the existing playground, I should say. When you climb up into some of those structures, there's solid wall panels in there, and so you have these hidden areas. It's just not a good thing for parents when they can't see what their kids in the structure there. The safety sourcing materials, playground safety standards, so, and also drainage improvements as well is something that we want to look at. The drainage of that playground has been working well. It's had a 20-year service life, but we've noticed in the last few years that we have drainage issues, and so our crew that lived last winter did some work to improve the drainage there on a short-term basis. So here, zooming in here. So this is just a top-down view of the proposed, the new equipment. And I want to point out that these red lines around the equipment, that delineates the fall zones. And for safe equipment and use and whatnot, is that you have to have these fall zones and be separate enough from the others. There is some overlap depending on the type of equipment that's allowed, but there's only a maximum amount. And the point here is that they took that existing footprint and maximized what could be put in there, and we have a lot of new and great, amazing things in the park. We currently have 4 belt swings and 2 top swings. We have the belt swings over by the parking lot side, and the top swings over on the other, the west side. So there'll be 7 swings in this swing set, which includes 2 top swings and 4 belt swings and 1 adaptive swing. And that has the plastic harness that comes over. And so special needs folks can get in there with their caregiver and enjoy swinging in the park. That also can be utilized by folks, anybody, as far as kids and I believe adults too. 2 new rotating features. There's a larger one, it's called a tri-runner, and then there's a seat that spins, and we have at, I believe it's Blueberry Park, at least Blueberry Park, we've got a seat spinner type activity there, and this one actually has like armrests and whatnot, so actually special needs kids can go in there again with their caregiver and experience something like that, which we just didn't have in our park system before. Towers, tube slides, so not really moving too far away from what we had, but just really improved features for that. Much better 2 to 5 age area, just more exciting, active, just engages all your senses, sight, sound, and activity. Ground level inclusive features. Both of the play structures, you can see there's pointer going again. Whoa, here we go. The entry here and the entry here are designed low enough so a wheelchair can be brought right up to it. And then the features kind of going through there for some kids, because obviously with special needs there's different levels of ability, so some kids can get in there and grab and move through those structures. That's something that we didn't have before in any of our play structures. Challenging climbers, so really taking things a bit further at that park than what we've had there. At Rainier View Park, we have a big rotating climber. It's been wildly popular. We've had that there for about 4 or 5 years now. And so that climber that's featured in this park is kind of bringing some of that energy and excitement to this park. Fish, frogs, ducks, and docks. So they really did an outstanding job of getting a nice theme that really complements the park, and you'll see in the pictures and whatnot that they'll move on to. Really speaks to the lake tide, the uses there. Just have some playful elements that really are going to make this the attractive feature for everybody. Wheelchair access and inclusion. Improved access points and better visibility into the playground. I mentioned that a little bit earlier with the problems we have with the existing structure and visibility in. So the new playground. So here's kind of zooming in a little bit. There's wheelchair accessible poured rubber surfacing. It's going to cover about 20% of the surfacing. We didn't go 100% on that because of the cost. So it would have been well over the budget. So from the north to the south, all along the east portion of the playground is this rubberized surfacing. And you can see the different colors and whatnot. And it basically, when you zoom out, and you'll see it, it features like a lake. And you can see the fish and they're getting to fly, and they can do little playful things like that with the poured in place surface. Another point to be noted is that just like talking about removing barriers, also with multi-generational and whatnot, is that, you know, all the surfacing with the chips and the curbing and whatnot creates kind of a mental barrier where a lot of times adults, grandparents, they might want to just kind of stay on the periphery there, and the kids are all playing in the playground. Well, this with this rubberized surfacing, it really just like it invites you in. You, next thing you know, you're in the playground, and that's good. That's to be encouraged, that you know, parents, grandparents, you know, multi-generations are in there experiencing and enjoying the playground, you know, with the kids. So there you go, there's a little bit of view there. Get the waterfall rock climber there. So this is kind of looking from the parking lots below here, looking to the west. So the lake is over to the right, and the building is over to the left. So there's a waterfall climber. There's also a little tunnel in there. And again, speaking to that hidden area, so this tunnel is going to be lined up with the parking lot. So the whole east-west side, you see through this, so that it doesn't really create, again, it's not like curved or anything like that, as you can see. So the tall towers, and you can see here there are climbers. The kids can just come out here and start climbing around. And you know, some of the things too with these playgrounds is creating circulation. Like you go up, you go around, you know, and so you're doing things. You're going from climbing up here, across here, there, then you're up on the rock climber over there. So exciting. And it's just kind of pointing out some of the circulation I was talking about. The 7-seat swing, and actually they circled the wrong one. It's the lower one. It's more of a lower level there. So it's the ADA with a you know, caregiver, special needs kids can get in there, and also just kids can get in there. It's not going to be the higher one for the younger kids. So we have a challenging net climber. And you can see with this net climber, not only is there a net going across here in front of the structure, but along the sides you have different types of ways to climb, like this, and then there's, you know, these are a little bit different look, and then you have these chains with those pods or whatever they are on there. So you have all of these different variety of experiences to climb on there, sit on top of it, hang underneath it, whatever you can imagine. So exciting area for preschoolers. So there's pointing with my finger. This challenging little climbing area there. There are features on here that have like noisemakers and just little games you can play that'll be on the sides of those. And then this. It's kind of a neat climber in the cable, so it kind of has some movement in it as you're kind of making your way through it. So there's another view of it. And look, we have a frog. That's a way to climb up into that one. So you have the waterfall at one and the frog at the other. There he is, kind of bouncing in. And they, you know, were creative there with the frog tracks and then the duck prints, so the little duck there. Transfer accessible dock and trout. So that dock is the height and the trout as well. Again, so you know, special needs kids in like a wheelchair, they can cycle right up to that and experience and be a part of it and not feel like isolated or excluded with the other kids. So. Oh, there goes the trout. We got a lot of trout in the lake. There's also a 5-piece inclusive music station. This is really something that's going to be really a neat little feature there, and that's kind of where the merry-go-round was. Something to note there in this is that there's these mallets that hang by cables for all of the equipment, and they actually have openings in them, so if you don't have a good grasp, if you can't grasp things, your hand can be slipped through, you know, and you can go ahead and make the music. These chimes up here, they're like, I think the tallest one's about 9 feet, so they're gonna have a nice look to them, you know, kind of give a little bit of artistic look here in the playground, and there'll be some nice tunes. So Here's the overall. And there is the tri-runner. And that's kind of taking that merry-go-round and upgrading it there. That piece of equipment was actually introduced, I believe, a couple of years ago, nationally on the scene. And then last year at the Washington Recreation and Park Association convention, they featured that. And it was just a really exciting and very popular. All of the different parks folks were all climbing on there and spinning on it. One thing is, we will be the first park in the state of Washington to have one of those. So that's kind of exciting to have that. So here you go. You can see it in motion. Oh, and then pause. So there's a little bit close up of the music. There's that spinning chair I was talking about. Climbing kind of, through and just having just different feels and challenges and sensory things for kids. Slide. One more thing. I hope this plays and works.
Advisory board meeting out there at Freilands. Great. I don't know who is first. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Thanks for that, Mike. Just a couple questions. How was the turnout at the Freilands Elementary?
So the park board was there, and we had about seven or so citizens, and then also the mayor and Councilmember Rasmussen was there at the as well.
The video there didn't show the fence between the parking lot and the playground?
Yeah, there is a fence between the parking lot and the playground.
So nothing's
changing there, yeah.
Okay.
And then outside of the play area there, we have benches and whatnot around there too, so the and tables. So
that the parking fence down and the grass and the benches, that all stays.
Yeah.
Just right where the actual play area is.
Yeah, right where the curving is, that's where all of the it'll all change and transform into that.
Okay. Yeah, thanks. That looks good to me. Those are the only questions I have. I appreciate the Parks Board and your staff for all your work on this.
Thank you.
And so I'll move to authorize the mayor to sign the purchase order quote for playground equipment, including installation utilizing the U.S. Communities Purchasing Cooperative Master Contract Number 110179 through Game Time, care of Sightlands Park and Playground Products Incorporated, in an amount of $317,545.42, and expressly authorize further minor revisions to the extent deemed necessary or appropriate.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen for the requested action in Agenda Bill Number 17-038 as written. Anything further, Councilmember Hanford? Okay, Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Mike, again, nice job to your team and the Parks Board. I left the meeting last week just in awe, and actually ran home and was showing the pictures to my wife, and she made the comment to me that it's taken her back to her childhood of playing on the Hamburglar playground. So, yeah, I'm excited. I mean, that's the park that my family uses, my kids love. You know, and after the presentation, the thing that struck me the most was, you know, our current equipment there, how underutilized in respect of the space goes, and how much the new equipment maximizes that space. It's, if you compare the top-down views on both setups, it's night and day. I love the fact that it incorporates the lake environment around it and pulls that together, and that it also offers the adaptive or inclusive activities and opportunities. Being the first one in the state for the Tri Runner, that was pretty cool. And excited to see how that goes on. I think one of the questions from one of the comments that from the citizens I heard was in regards to taking out the merry-go-round. This was kind of taking the place of it. And, you know, but you know, she seemed pretty pleased with the opportunities there. The one thing that was talked about that I didn't hear tonight, Mike, was the addition of the path on the, I guess it'd be the south side.
Oh, thank you. From the parking lot side and the south end of it, near where the music station is, we're going to be where the merry-go-round is. That portion there, that's going to be the access from the pathway and whatnot to for construction. And so, you know, there'll be a little bit from the parking lot to the playground that'll get torn up a little bit there. So what we'll do is we'll, after it's done, is we'll create a little pathway there. So what we're going to be able to do is add an access point into that playground from that side. Because the well-worn path of, you know, through the mud and in the wet months has been through there. So what we're going to be able to do through this project is also address that by creating another access path. So thanks for bringing that up.
I'm very excited and very much in favor of this. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Scarborough.
Mike, a couple questions. What do we do with the old stuff?
As much as we'd like to repurpose that equipment, I talked about the age of it, the replacement issues for broken pieces and whatnot, and I did consult with our insurance company just to kind of, make sure we're ruling that out, and they confirmed that they're not in favor of us doing something like that. So what we're going to do is it's not going to end up in a landfill. We're going to recycle it. So, steel and plastic, that's basically what it is. So,
there isn't some place around that can't afford to do what we're doing and might want it that has nothing? Or do they not want to be?
Well, I think how worn that equipment is, while, it's inspected and whatnot, I don't think it's very desirable for be reutilized, but we will be able to use a few pieces of more recent, the belt swings, and we'll examine the conditions of these things, and we may actually have one of the smaller slides where we have another of the similar brand equipment that we may keep as a spare. So there may be a few spares, but the rest of it will be recycled.
And pardon my naivety, but I presume that the insurance company and whoever covers us for insurance, there's there's some place that we go that this new equipment says is blessed by the insurance companies.
Oh, it meets all of the current safety standards.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it'll be installed. Exactly. Factory installed, and then our staff. We actually have two staff members in the parks that are certified playground inspectors. Mm-hmm. So we inspect all of our playgrounds.
Thank you.
Yeah, for safety.
Thanks. Good job.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? All right, seeing none, we'll go ahead and call for the question. This is again the requested action in that agenda bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 4-0. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, next item on the agenda is final action number one. This is EB17-039, ordinance number 003-2017, approving Prairie Farms rezone, first and final reading, and resolution number 007-2017, approving Prairie Farms preliminary plat and planned residential development, or PRD. Ms. Russell.
Good evening. I'm Jenna Russell with the city. And tonight I'm here to talk about the Curry Farms preliminary plat and PRD, along with two additional applications that were considered concurrent with the plat. Just to give you an idea of the context, Hanson Homes is proposing a 25-lot preliminary plat and PRD on 4.56 gross acres. So that would be the property that's outlined in hot pink. Try to get something that would stand out. And just a few quick facts about the property. It's located at 15831 171st. The zoning is UR9600 currently. And it comes with a comprehensive plan future land use designation of low density SFR. It's not in any critical areas, not in the shoreline area, and there's currently a single family residence and a garage on the site, and those are proposed to be retained. Frontage improvements are required, including pavement, street widening, curb gutter, planters, and sidewalks on 171st Avenue Southeast, which is to the west of the property. So this particular property is within the boundaries for Freilands Elementary, Hidden River Middle, and Monroe High School, of course. So the applicant's proposing 18,783, so 0.43 acres, or square feet, sorry, of usable open space in tracts 998 and 999. And if you look at, I believe it's Exhibit B to Attachment 2, you can see the plat. So tract 998 is most of its park and recreational space, so there will be a sport court. It will be active recreational space. Tract 999 is actually providing a trail easement, so to connect with other trails in the area eventually. And this is a really bad image of the plat, but I thought I would throw it up there just to give you an idea of what the layout is. Maybe you can see on lot one, I'm going to zoom in there in a moment, but that would be the residence proposed to be retained. Just a quick timeline showing that staff met all of the requirements as far as noticing and public hearing. First and foremost, I'm going to talk about the variance application that was considered with the plat, PRD, and there's also a rezone that I'm going to discuss. So this variance application, as you can see, requested relief from the required front yard setback, just to allow the existing residents to stay on the lot so that it should be in conformance. As you know, variances are quasi-judicial actions. The hearing examiner is actually the decision body on that particular application, and he chose to approve the variance. There were no appeals. No further action on this is required by the council. And then, first and foremost, to talk about the rezone application, the applicant is asking to rezone the property from UR9600 to UR6000. And in doing this, initially the applicant had proposed 31 lots for this plat. The comprehensive plan designation, as I stated previously, is low-density single-family residential, which generally allows for 3 to 5 dwelling units per acre. With 31 units proposed, the project well exceeded the 3 to 5 dwelling unit per acre maximum. And so the applicant went back, revised the proposal, came back with a 25-lot project, which comes in at 5.48 DU per acre. According to our code, we round down. So we're right at 5 units per acre. And the applicant, when considering the rezone this evening, so approval of the plat is contingent upon approval of the rezone. And we have to consider the rezone first prior to the plat. So as you can see, the motion up here for the rezone would have to be considered before the second motion in the bottom. Along with the rezone, staff is also requesting that council rules and procedures are waived so that, that requires 2 readings of ordinances. So the rezone ordinance is in your packet. And also you have the city's existing zoning map, comp plan map, and you can see where the rezone's proposed. There should be a vicinity map of sorts in there. So after considering ordinance number 003-2017, if that is approved, then the next action would be to consider the plat itself. And the hearing examiner has, as you know, you have a copy of the recommendation in your packet, a couple copies actually. The hearing examiner has recommended approval of both the plat and the rezone. So I'm happy to take any questions at this time.
Thank you. Questions or a motion? Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you, Mayor. So, thank you for your presentation. Just a couple of things. Can you just refresh those of us that aren't constantly going over the UR9600 numbers and refresh us on what the 9600 and the 6000 means?
Absolutely. And it's probably a good time to clarify that this application was vested under our previous regulations. So the new LID ordinance that just went through does not apply to this project. With UR9600, there's a minimum lot size of 9,600 square feet. There's a minimum lot width, in this particular case, of 60 feet. And the required setbacks are a front yard setback to the living space area of the house. 10 is a minimum of 10 feet. To the garage is a minimum of 20 feet. You have a minimum 5-foot setback on both sides. And for a standard lot, you need to have a total of 15 feet. For a PRD, that's allowed to be reduced to 5 feet on each side for a total of 10. The rear yard is 10 feet. So the difference with UR6000 is the minimum lot size is 6,000 square feet. The setbacks remain the same, and the minimum lot width is also 60 feet.
Okay, so it's just denser housing.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. And that's what we want. We talked about that, so that's good. The other question I had was, you're newer, so you're probably not familiar, but we don't like to usually waive rules of procedure. They're there for a reason. So if there's a great reason, then typically the council's supportive, but just for the future, if you could tell us why you want to waive them? Because I haven't heard a compelling reason if there's a time crunch or something else, because otherwise I wouldn't be supportive of it. And the reason for that is so that things don't get rushed through on nights like tonight when there's 3 people missing. So nothing against you, I just want to know what the reason is for wanting to have us move so quickly this evening.
So the reason that this is moving quickly, the code has 2 separate requirements regarding timing. The first being that the council needs to set the date within, for consideration of the plat. I lost my place. And the first meeting, first available meeting after we receive the hearing signature recommendation. With that said, we have 14 days to take the plat in front of you for consideration. So there is a specified timeline in the code. With that, so in order to consider the plat, you would have to work through the rezone. That's the rush. But totally understood. I apologize. There was no way that.
No, that's okay. So I guess that doesn't answer my question. So does it has to go through tonight then, or?
Mr. Bauer has said.
The as this is a non-standard special case, or just not a usual plat, plats are usually done on the first, basically done by resolution.
Right.
It comes to the council after the we get the hearing examiner's recommendation the week before. We have the council consideration of that the next week. Because it's the plat and the rezone at the same time, and the rezone has gone through the public hearing process, so it has been out in public, we were requesting that it be done at the same time just to keep the project moving for the developer, so that rather than having to have an extra week or more to do the rezone first and then the plat, do both at the same time.
Okay, so it's just to keep the developer on track?
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions? Is there a motion? Is there a motion to accept it as first reading? If not, to take action A, I would understand the staff would be asking to at least accept this for first reading, if not, to dispense with it this evening. So if you were to want to make a motion to accept it as first reading, I'm sorry, Councilmember Hanford, I just saw your light.
That's okay. I've got to maximize it.
I have no idea.
Switches back and forth. I'm still not hearing a compelling reason. No offense, but to keep the developer on track is not a compelling reason. That's the whole reason for the two readings. So I wouldn't be in favor of making that, unless staff has some other enlightenment. Otherwise, I'll just make the first motion, and we can confirm it next week.
Okay.
And I'm not against this at all, but there's a reason for our procedures. So.
Which is that one? The first one? Oh, just the first one.
I can get it to work. Thanks. So I'll make motion B then.
Minus.
So I'll move to adopt.
Clarification, move to accept as first reading.
Thank you. I'll move to accept as first reading ordinance number 003-2017, amending the zoning designation in the Curry Farms rezone area from urban residential 9600, UR 9600, to urban residential 6000, UR 6000, setting forth supportive findings, providing for severability, and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen to accept as first reading ordinance number 003-2017, amending zoning designation in the Curry Farms rezone area from urban residential 9600, which is UR 9600, to urban residential 6000, UR 6000, setting forth supportive findings, providing for severability, and fixing a time when the same shall become effective, RZN 2016-01. Discussion on the motion. Councilmember Hanford.
Just for clarification, so the resolution will be made next week after the ordinance passes. Directly. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion as stated, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 4-0. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is council member reports. We'll just go ahead and go around since we don't have any special reports this evening. Councilmember Davis.
Nothing tonight. Thank you.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Again, attended the Parks Board meeting. It's been a while since I've been able to go, but it was great meeting to attend. And then driving around town, Brad or Mike, did I see lights being hung downtown today?
You may have.
All right. That was a good sight to see.
Yeah.
They're supposed to get it done by the end of this week. So this is just the sample. There's two different methods of doing it. So we're going to put them up one on one side of the street, one on the other, and then allow the people to look at them and see which way they want to go for the whole area.
Awesome.
All the people? Or?
Everybody's going to see them.
Is it going to be like a vote?
No. The city council is going to decide. Yeah.
Good to see you.
Thank you. Anything further? All right, Councilmember Hanford.
I'm nothing for tonight.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Going to the steering committee meeting once again.
Oh, yes, Snohomish County tomorrow. Thank you.
But I reported on a month earlier about it going somewhere about there, and it's becoming a little clearer. I guess PSRC is Puget Sound Regional Community.
Puget Sound Regional Council.
And I'm becoming more clear on what a Puget Sound Regional Council or group is. So, like, they're talking about big areas in Puget Sound that they follow to see if they're being developed correct or continuing to develop. I guess they range from Puyallup to Tacoma to the north as well. So it's all becoming a little clearer. So bear with me, maybe two or three more meetings, I'll understand it. The other was they continue to use the phrase, you can't build your way out of the quagmire of traffic. You have to. They're really pushing SQ3, they're pushing any other form of transportation that's more mass than an automobile with street line. And it seems to me that they've all gotten together to use the same term of you can't build your way out of it. So a month ago they showed a freeway in Houston and looked like 10 lanes going that way and 10 lanes going that way. And this time they used an example in Los Angeles of 10 lanes going that way and 10 lanes going that way. And then the statement, you can't build your way out of it. So I don't know how that settles with folks. Some want mass transit, absolutely, some don't. Some still want to get in their car and go. So they continue to talk about Uber and pilotless cars. You just call a car, it shows up at your house, picks you and your kids up, takes you to the Everett Center for the venue, and then you call and he kind of gets you. And how General Motors and other vehicle entities are building or getting on board with the research and or development of these so that their goal is to build less cars, or they envision that less cars will be built. People will buy less cars because they will either use something like Uber or a pilotless vehicle and or mass transit. So I don't know the time frame on that. I'm suspecting I'll be old enough to want an Uber at that point instead of taking my own car. But I'm sure that some of the younger people are going to have a bigger learning curve than I am in 20 years. But that's what it's all about, it seems. It's an interesting committee. It's, again, I've been to two, and the message in both seems to be the same. It has to do with the traffic congestion and these regional centers that they... I think the regional centers appears to also drive funding in some way for the areas. And if that regional center isn't doing what it's designed to do, i.e. growing or drawing people, then it starts to wither like a leaf on a tree that's dying. So I guess it appears that they continue to analyze those centers and come up with new reasons in there in the regional center. So that's what that was about. Other than that, nothing else to report. So
one of the things.
Begin.
Thank you. One of the things that I would ask you to
kind of keep your ear for when you're attending those meetings. First, the Puget Sound Regional Council, one of the things they do is help out with grants for funding. So federal funds and whatnot, as I understand it, will go through PSRC. Another thing to recognize is that when PSRC and the metropolitan cities talk about regional centers, they're talking about I-5 and 405. And that's where you have one city that is plastered up against another city. We live in a city here, and I would just ask that as people are talking about mass transit and things like that, those are very metropolitan issues. I have run into people, or met people would be the appropriate thing to say when we're talking about cars, because we don't want to run into people. But I've met people that would, for example, not want to widen 522 and instead talk about transit services. And, you know, I know that we're a city out here, but we're also not a very high-density city here. And we will continue to be using our cars here. We do benefit from and value the transit system, but there is not a bus except for two that go to Seattle down 522. And kids that go to Cascadia or to the University of Washington at Bothell, they can't rely on transit service to get there. They actually have to drive there. So as you're listening to folks, if you could just help deliver the message, just a reminder that we are a city. We are a job creator. We have about 8,500 jobs here in town, and we grow during the day to larger than we are at night because people come to work here. And to support a transportation system that can be used two directions, people coming to work here in the morning while people are leaving in the morning to go to work other places, means investing in our transportation infrastructure here too. There will be a lot of focus when you're around PSRC and around Snohomish County tomorrow in talking about the metropolitan cities, but we're a city also, and to realize growth management means investing in cities like ours too. Yeah. Please don't let them call us a rural area. We are a city. And the cool thing about our city is you take a look at the map behind you. We're a city surrounded by green. We're not a city that even touches another city. So I value that. There's identity. Okay. All right. Thank you. So off my soapbox. Sorry. Out to staff. Pam. Okay, Ben.
I did get word tonight that the last three of our contracts were voted on by the union and they were all accepted, so that's good news. I will be bringing those back for council vote in hopefully in a couple weeks. So that is super great.
And I forgot, we've changed something, so I'm going to go to finance right now and then we'll go back through everybody for the finance department report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Ms. Hazard.
So for those of you who don't know me, I am your finance director on deck. So tonight what we're doing is we thought we'd give you a little preview as to what we do in the finance department. In your packet was the January month end status report for the budget. I'm not really going to go over that because with just one month, it's kind of hard to start spotting trends yet, especially with a lot of our expenses. We do have a lot of expenses that get paid once a year up front in January, so everything's a little skewed. We'll definitely go into more detail at least quarterly, if not more often, as the numbers require. I also included a little memo to kind of just give you some highlights of what's been going on in finance. As we mentioned at last week's meeting, we did get a reaffirmation on our bond rating from Standard & Poor's. We are AA and continue to be AA, and they said the outlook on us is very stable. I did send out the full report to council and to the administrator and the mayor that gave Standard & Poor's full rationale as to why they gave us that rating. I can't say it enough. I know I said it last week. For a city this size, that's pretty darn outstanding. And a lot of that had to do, if you did get a chance to read the report, had to do with they were impressed with how the city manages its finances, the budgeting, the overview that council has, because you review the reports every month, and that says a lot to about your outgoing finance director, and I can't say enough about her. It's actually been a pleasure working with her so far, too, so just wanted to give her kudos on that. I was actually very impressed to watch the finance staff, since I've been here almost a month now, in dealing with passport services. We actually offer passport services here at City Hall for our citizens and actually anybody in the area that wants to come and apply for passports. And it's actually a pretty steady traffic that comes through. So it's a very popular program. We've been doing it since about 2013. And when I was looking at the numbers, I was pretty impressed with the fact that we are growing on average, with regards to traffic, over 26% a year with what's coming in. And according to the State Department, they are warning everybody who does passports that that number is just going to continue to grow over the next few years. It's something that I know when the folks come in, they're very appreciative that we do it. We take the photos here as well. We help them through the application process, make sure all the paperwork's in line, and then forward it on to the State Department for actual processing. One of the things I wanted to express kudos to the staff is one of the things that they did is they took it upon themselves to actually reach out to Google and create an account so that if you are within the area and you've got the GPS monitoring turned on with Google, if you type in passport services near me, Monroe City Hall pops up. So yes, so we're getting the word out there to let people know that we do offer this service. And again, not something you traditionally think of in the finance department, so I thought that would be fun to share with you guys. And then one of the last things I wanted to bring up tonight was, Diane was kind enough to hand it out for me. I've also got copies for the audience as well. We mentioned last week, or I should say Brad mentioned last week, the Public Works Department has swapped out all the water meters. So now everything can just be downloaded automatically. We can get reads on demand. And part of that process is a software program called Census Analytics, where they can take a look at individual accounts and just kind of see what the trends are with regards to how water is being used. So I thought it would be fun to do a little show and tell. And so what I've handed out to you guys this evening is a couple of graphs to give you a little bit of contrast. So the one on top is a single person household and almost a month's worth of use. So the utility billing clerk can look at this and go, okay, this looks pretty normal. This is kind of what we expect. There are periods where there's no water usage at all. You know, so probably the person's not home or they're not running water, whatever the case might be. And then, you know, you could have like laundry going or dishes being washed, etc. In contrast, the second graph that we're showing you here is actually a sixplex. And this particular property, you can see a spike in the middle of the graph where there is a lot of usage. And so she went, well, that kind of looks like an anomaly. She actually reached out to the property owner, gave them a call, and said, you know, we're looking at this graph, and it looks like you might have a leak. The property owner actually then did take a look, found they did have a leak, requested that we shut them off so they could get the leak fixed, and we're extremely grateful that we called them and we were proactive about it so they could catch it before they get that nasty surprise in their bill at the end of the month. To date, or at least when I wrote the memo towards the end of last week, she told me she's actually reached out to over 30 accounts that are either in the process of getting leaks fixed or they're looking to see if there are leaks, and most of them did have leaks. And she said pretty much everybody has just been very grateful that we're starting to do this. So, again, I just wanted to share that with you, let you know what we're doing, and quite frankly, we're very grateful that Public Works and Council approved that project and got it done. So, and that's my report for finance.
Thank you. We have a couple of questions.
I didn't see you chime in first, so Councilmember Hanford and Councilmember Scarborough.
Thanks. Thank you. That's great news about the graph and the story.
It's pretty amazing. I have to admit, and I probably shouldn't tell you guys this, but the single person household graph is mine. I figured, you know, if I'm going to pick on somebody, I'll pick on my own. In some ways, it's kind of creepy because you can kind of see what I'm doing when I'm home. But on the other hand, it's also, you know, very useful. Again, it's just universal. One, the staff is excited to do this. They feel like they actually get to be the good guys. Yeah. For a change, and they really enjoy it.
Exactly.
And everybody has just been consistently grateful when we've reached out to let them know that they have a possible week. So.
Great. The only other thing I was going to say was that the staff here did passport photos for almost my whole family. Should have stopped selection. And we were very pleased with how efficient in and out and friendly. And we got passports right away, so it's good.
Well, I'll make sure to pass that on. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
When you said there's growing, somebody's reporting to you that there's going to be a growing number of people looking at that to get that. Is that because our driver's licenses are no longer going to be acceptable for air travel because they aren't?
They're not the enhanced IDs. I would imagine that's some of it. I mean, I could quite frankly speculate as to many reasons why. Some of them would probably be more cynical than others, and probably this wouldn't be an appropriate forum for me to share that. The State Department has seen increases. Like I said, when I looked at year-over-year numbers, it tells the same story. We are continuing to increase with the amount of traffic that's coming through. So I think more people are starting to value the importance of having that particular document. And so they're coming in. The other thing that I've been surprised at is the number of kids that parents are getting passports for. As you know, children under 17, I think it is, passports are only good for 5 years instead of 10. But they're getting them for the kids anyhow. And I'm an Army brat, so I think that's a good idea myself. So I've had one since, you know, I started breathing, so.
So if you're an Army brat, then do you know if a military ID card or a retirement ID card is considered enhanced ID at an airport?
I don't know if it is for TSA. I know it is for, you know, if you're trying to get onto the military bases. For example, you know, I took my mother out to Madigan last year after it was supposed to turn over for the federal installations and they wouldn't accept the Washington driver's license anymore. I brought along my passport, so I was okay to get on base with her. So I would imagine if they're good enough for the, you know, for the military bases, they may be. But you'd have to check the State Department website on that.
Okay. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Farrell. You're up.
Thank you, Mr. Farrell.
Again.
Council, meet again. So, the only thing I want to report is that last week, the Movies Under the Moon Committee met and came up with a really stellar movie for the four Friday evenings in August. The first Friday evening movie is the Lego Batman movie. The second one is the movie called Sing. The third one is the new remake of The Jungle Book. And then the fourth movie is Rogue One, a Star Wars story. So,
oh, my God. That's
okay. Wait for summer in the park.
Okay, does anybody have any questions for Mr. Kerr?
All right. Ms. Nelson.
Nothing tonight.
Ms. Sassert, anything else?
I think you guys heard me enough tonight.
All right. Mr. Feilberg?
Nothing tonight.
All right. Chief Quinzer?
Nothing.
All right. Mr. Mosley, do you have anything from administration?
Just one point. We met last week, Mr. Feilberg and I did, with the new real estate people that are handling our real estate in the North Kelsey area, and kind of after the previous real estate person is no longer with the company, kind of rebooted that effort, and I think both of us were pleased that they had a pretty clear plan as to how they were going to approach it and who they were going to approach and that type of thing. So while there's been a bit of a pause in, you know, very much aggressively marketing our property to the north of town there, I think that they brought in First Western, which is a very large, well-known real estate broker firm to help us with help them and us with that, and I think that was good information. And I, as I say, we kind of it felt like kind of a reboot. It, you know, things had kind of died down, and we needed to recharge them. And I don't have any comments about the lobbyist report, which is in your packets. Nothing particularly stands out there other than continuing to monitor and work on our capital projects and other legislation that has been before you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Mosley? Okay, just running through some things for me. You'll note in Monroe this week that so we have an open house on March 8th from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. The Department of Transportation will be coming and doing a presentation that will be similar to the presentation that they provided to you back in December about the improvements to State Route 522. So that's Wednesday night next week, and I would encourage you all to be there.
Time again?
7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. at Monroe High School. We have sent out invitations all the way down Highway 2, down 203, which is down to Duval, and also down 522. We have sent out invitations to the companies and organizations that have been supportive of doing improvements to 522, and also to other elected officials, including the Snohomish County Council and Executive, and to our delegation here in the 39th, to the 1st, and then to other representatives also. When we informed our representatives down in Olympia, they'd indicated that they didn't know if they were going to be able to make it because they are in the middle of session right now, and this is a Wednesday. We were not able to put this on a Friday or a Saturday, which might have helped them get there, but we would have had challenges with staff being there for those presentations on those days.
So this is on 522. This open house is on 522.
Yes, sir, 522. So for me, over the weekend, my wife and I both joined 82 other people on the south side of the river. We cleaned up former encampments on the south side of the river just west of 203. I was impressed to see that the group that put this together called River Junkie were able to bring, like I said, 82 people from all over. And when I mean all over, I mean there were people as far south as Oregon, as far east that I heard as Wenatchee, and up toward Bellingham. There were people, the folks that were there did a really good job in organizing the event. It only took us 2 hours to fill up two dumpsters that would probably, all the material that we fit in those two dumpsters is probably, would probably fit in the administrator's office from the floor to the ceiling and all the way up to the walls. To give you an idea of some of the material that we moved, my wife and I both unearthed about 6 to 8 needles just between the two of us. There was material that I won't describe here right now, and at one point a family of rats surprised some folks. There were 7 different encampments, is what I would guess, sort of clusters of them, that we were able to do. And to give you an idea, I thought this would be an all-day event with the 80 plus people that were there. It was cleaned up in 2 hours.
It was a very well-run event, and I thank River Junkie for coming out and doing that. I thank the deputies from the Snohomish County Sheriff's Office that were able to connect the property owner out there with River Junkie to have the work done. And I am really thankful for the folks who were able to get out there and do that work. So I think that's all that I have for right now. Did I have anything else? No, I think that's it. So we'll go ahead and we'll go to the agenda for next week and the extended agenda. Mr. Mosley.
Thank you, sir. Yes, on the March 7th, at this point, fairly full agenda with a discussion of the traffic revisions for Blueberry and Kelso Street, bringing back to you specific recommendations based on your discussions and your direction. We would then, if you concur, we'd then bring that back to you later for specific action. Requested to have a discussion about the term limits ordinance, and that's been itemized on the agenda. Amending certain codes and in our municipal code. We would then also have the discussion the Snohomish Health District's proposed ILA on the per capita funding, and then we would set a date to consider, potentially set, tentatively set a date to consider the Eaglemont 4 preliminary plat and to consider the Keller Parmenter preliminary plat. And then final action on the Snohomish County Social Worker Services. So it's a fairly active agenda for next week. And the other tentative items for the 14th and the 21st are outlined in your packet.
Are there any additions or deletions or questions or comments regarding next week's agenda or the future agenda?
Thank you.
If there's no further business required this evening, Councilmember Rasmussen.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. We have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Rasmussen and a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion passes for adjourn. Thank you very much for your service. We are out. Adjourned. Thank you. We are out. Out of words.